Because he's the Messiah.
David. And it stops at David. Okay, it stops at David. So when he says, tell you this book might have been written. It wouldn't have been written before David's reign. And it's not written after David's reign, or you'd have had more on the genealogy.
Right.
So, now think another time thing. Following the genealogy, we're at Boaz. Who is Boaz's mother?
Rahab.
Okay, historically, where do we know about Rahab?
She's when the spies came into the land of Canaan, they went to her house, and she was saved because she sheltered them.
And so what book is that in? It's in Joshua. So if it's in Joshua, and Rahab with Salmon has Boaz, how much, where is this in the book of Judges, probably? Early on in the book of Judges. So that's how you find your times. That's as close as we're going to get. We know it's, but was it written during the time of Ruth? No, because of the genealogy. Was it long into the Judges at the very end? No, because we have Boaz and his mother Rahab, and even though he is older, so that would be another generation, he's not dead. So there's time there. So it's in the early part of the Judges. If it's in the early part of the Judges, what has happened for the history of the Israelites? Where are they spiritually?
Good place. Everyone's doing what's right.
Now that's as we progress in Judges, but in the beginning, they were still had an echo of what went on with Joshua. Not a big one, but there were still believers within in Israel. And we look at Elimelech. Did God chastise Elimelech for leaving to go to Moab? But progressively in Moab, you watch the family's spiritual life degrade. You don't have God chastising Elimelech, but he shouldn't have been there. But by the time, then the boys, who do they marry?
Moabites.
Are they supposed to marry Moabites? And God looks at that and takes the boys' life away. Then mom gets back to Israel, and you still what? She comes there as what? What is she seeing herself as?
A failure.
A failure.
Empty.
Bitter.
Empty.
Empty. Was full, is now empty. Mm-hmm. What chapter is that in?
Three.
Two. See, as you go over those things in your thought processes, in your meditations, it will begin to make more and more sense to you. And that's just by simple observation. When we look at genealogy, what questions are we answering? We're answering who. What else are we answering?
When.
When. Now, how did I answer when?
In the order, chronological order.
It's chronological. I also answered it by looking at the end, which was David, and the beginning for Boaz, which is his mom, Rahab. And we know her time, even though we don't really know anything about Solomon. Salomon always looks like salmon to me.
Spelled the same. It is spelled the same.
Boaz is dad's salmon.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm answering the questions who, and I also want to know why God put them there. Why is this there? And is it important? And one of the things about Ruth is the book of Ruth, if nothing else, even though if you're not reading the personal story of Ruth, you're getting the line of Christ. And that will show up again in what other books? Do you know?
Matthew
is one, Luke's the other in the New Testament. How about the Old Testament?
Isaiah?
There's little bits in Isaiah, but the
Chronicles.
Chronicles and Kings are the ones who have, and Chronicles and Kings looks different, because Chronicles is from one perspective and Kings is from another. And that we'll all learn all those things. Okay, so you've answered the who. We started answering the what and the why. Do we have any where's anywhere in our story?
Bethlehem.
What are our where's?
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem? Which Bethlehem, and how do we know? Yes, that one. There is another Bethlehem, which is what I didn't even know. I've always wondered why Bethlehem seems to move around. Well, it didn't. It's actually two different places. Okay, so we learned that. Where else?
Moab.
And Moab. And we don't even know how they got over to Moab, because I said there's three ways they can get there. They can go up, down, or over the mountains. And they don't really tell us, because it's not important. See, there are questions that are never answered, because they don't need to be. And it's funny how, as a Christian culture, we tend to focus in on some of those things in the New Testament and come up with all sorts of weird theologies, because we're focusing on things that aren't even talked about. So it's hard enough to understand what is being talked about. Don't go down rabbit trails that go nowhere, trying to prove something that the Bible does not prove. Okay, so what, where, when, why? Did we have any why? Things that would be answered that were why questions anywhere in the book?
Why did they go to Bethlehem?
Why did they go to Bethlehem? That is the question.
Why did they go to Moab in the first place?
Why did they go to Moab? We have an answer to that, don't we, in the book? Okay, so both of those are actually answered.
Why is the whole kinsman redeemer involved, Boaz?
And why kinsman redeemer? And it begins us to think us to take us down a trail that we will get into more in this book. But it's even though kinsman redeemer in one sense has been talked about in the rest of the Bible, it's more in a law sense. When the woman doesn't have, when her husband dies, it's the responsibility of the brother to provide. And when, if he dies, it's the responsibility of the next brother. And we got that in which story?
Tamar.
So we got a cross-reference. So as we're doing our observation, our who, what, where, when, why, and how is our observation, out of that will come more questions. So, and we need to know how to interpret it, not just by necessarily what we're seeing, because it doesn't tell us. So we interpret it by going to cross-references, because that gives us what? A bigger context. If I talk to you about salvation in the New Testament, the book I'm going to take you to is the book of Romans. There's a whole book is on salvation. That's what the theme, the purpose, the reason for the book of Romans. It's divided by sin, chapters 1 through 321, 322 through 6, salvation, 6 through 8, sanctification, and 9, 10, 11, 12, service. That's the book of Romans. But to understand that, where do I need to start if I'm trying to understand salvation?
Back in Genesis.
Why?
Because you have to start with sin.
Because?
Because we're all in sin, Romans talks about.
And we need to find
it.
Out what that's all about. Yeah. I mean, if I'm told that I'm a sinner, I need to know how or why. You know, and if I'm looking at a beautiful, I know before I was a Christian, and I would look at beautiful babies, and people would tell me they're sinners. It was like, what the heck is wrong with you? You know, this kid hasn't even done anything, and you're calling it a sinner. Why? I need to have the answer why the book of Romans. Why did Jesus go to the cross? And was there any other way? So we start with the book of Genesis, and we start right back in the beginning and have to watch the fall. But we also need something else. We need to understand the character and nature of God. Can I do that in any one book? Nope. So what you need then is a notebook that keeps things like lists on what you're learning about God. What did you learn in Ruth about God? Anything? He loves it. Now, if you were a Jew, would you believe that?
Maybe after reading Ruth.
I don't think so. Having been raised in a Jewish neighborhood, if you understood Ruth, or Joshua, or the stories of various sundry, and even when you go back into places like Isaiah and the different prophets, he's always still making room for it. Even Egypt. as one day they would be blessed. How? Well, Jesus is coming to them too. So when we take the book of Ruth, it isn't just there all by itself. And when I begin to understand kinsman redeemer, that's going to start taking me to all sorts of places in the Bible to grab a hold of. And you're going to learn things about God. You learn that God loves Gentiles too. What kind of Gentiles?
Those who seek refuge.
Don't you think it's interesting he goes through the women? But I guess he kind of has to.
Because the victim was one wife. Can't just change the message.
And the man would have to be in the Hebrew line. We do have a story of a young Jewish woman who was married to a Gentile that's in the Bible. What story is that?
Timothy.
Esther.
Esther, you're right. Esther. And who is Esther? Was she a holy, God-fearing Jew? Probably not quite.
We're not told.
We're not really told, but we do see her being taught by her uncle, who is. So God has all these stories for purposes, and when we just hone in on a few or parts of things or just study one little thing and don't start building, what we're doing, guys, throughout all the classes we have together is we're building a theology. We're building our theology of God. We're building our theology of salvation, sin, who we are, where we're going. And the more we do that, the smaller we get. Why do we get smaller?
Because God is bigger.
God is bigger. I'm only one small part of history. Just a small part of history. And God loves people beyond me. We're told in many places he wills that none would perish. And it just keeps going on, generation to generation, and people are perishing. So we look at Ruth. So now we're taking all our big ideas and we're pulling them down to Ruth. And I said last week, this is a story of two widows.
On page 11, the genealogy on the way to Jesus. There's a lot.
And we're going to go through most all of those
Yeah.
in the next couple of years. So, any questions? You got your who, what, where, when, why, and how, so you got your observation.
Jesus. It takes a lot longer to get to us.
But just think, what would you do if you didn't take those 2 years to learn it, 2-3 years to learn God's Word? And how our life would be small and simple and belong just to us. Mm-hmm. And when we read stories like the story of Ruth and Naomi, we realize the stories aren't just, they don't just belong to us. We belong to them. We enter their stories. In that sense, they enter our story. Because believers are believers from one generation to the next, and we're all attached. And how are we attached?
Through God and Jesus. And you know, when I was 10 years old, my birthday, my folks got me a Bible. I still got it, the zipper on it. And I thought I was going to read that. Couldn't pronounce most of it. and you know, at 10 years old, I didn't know what to do with it.
Especially if you started Matthew. When I did the same thing before I was a Christian. And started, because that was the New Testament, and I knew that the New Testament was where Jesus was. So I started, and it was the genealogy. And I was like,
yeah.
I still can't pronounce them, so, you know, after 50 years or close to that of being a Christian, I'm still not pronouncing them right.
But still, every little piece that you pick up along the way kind of falls into place whenever years later you realize, oh, that, and then it starts connecting.
Like a big puzzle.
Yeah.
It's being built. It's building into something. We just don't know what the picture is that's being built, because right now it's just piece by piece, step by step. So anybody learn anything this week that they were particularly excited about or not excited about?
Needed 3 more days.
What?
Needed 3 more days.
listen, this thing was only supposed to be 1 week. This is our third week. You are down right. We are going on to chapter two, or lesson two.
Lauren has her hand.
I don't know if it's particularly in the lesson. I just had an interesting thought as I was listening to it. And it even pulls out the whole God is so big and so sovereign, God loves us enough to give us a choice thing. God took a family that never should have been in Moab. He brought the people that probably never should have existed. A marriage that never should have happened. A woman that never should have been in Israel. He prepared the heart of a man by his mother coming from the
knees
of God. And yet, through all of that, there's still a place for grace, there's still a place for his mercy, there's still a place for him to come to him, and he's still accomplishing that big picture plan that he is accomplishing all along. In spite of everybody's choices and messy way that it all plays out.
So why do you suppose God has the law when he doesn't follow it? What transcends the law?
Grace.
When we look at Ruth in her life, or Tamar, or Rahab, how did they ever get to be part of the genealogy? They could never be a Jew. It isn't like conversion. It's proselytizing, but it's not conversion. So how?
They both trusted. They all trusted the God of Israel.
And their lives show it, don't they?
They made hard choices that could have gotten them killed.
And in many ways, they were out there all by themselves, particularly the first two. They made that choice with the reality that they could die, but they knew God was real. They didn't understand everything about him, but do we understand everything about God? So you take the step that you're given that's in front of you. And when they talk about Ruth, what did Boaz say about this woman? In fact, what was the talk going around the town about her? And we already know God says he's looking for a broken and contrite heart. What does he not want?
Sacrifice.
And what is the sacrifice? Why not, in reality, he wants my life sacrificed, but why the word sacrifice?
It represents the law and works.
It represents the law and works. And what do we know about the law and works?
It's not.
We can't. And there's plenty of places in the New Testament tell us. Chapter 3 of Titus is really good with that. All of Romans is really good with that. I mean, it just tells us that it isn't the works. The works will, but we have James. And James says,
Faith without works
is
dead.
Okay, so how do we resolve that? If works isn't my way to salvation, but God's looking at it, what do they do?
If your actions show what you really believe, you can say all you want.
So what do we learn about Ruth and her actions? And what did she believe?
Naomi's God. She believed that it was her responsibility and privilege to serve her mother-in-law. And she listened to her throughout the whole book of Ruth. She did exactly what she was told to do.
In fact, when we come to Ruth, there is a word that is only used once. And what is that word?
Love.
And what is it telling us about? Love. Who loved whom? I'm talking loud. You guys need to talk louder. Sorry. Who?
Loved her mother-in-law.
She loved her mother-in-law. How do we know that? Exactly what we've been talking about. that proof came out of her life. And God saw that. And he knew she understood. He knew that she was part of it. Because how can you love? What is the basis of love? You know that God loved the world. But what do we know? What is the thing that we are supposed to be doing? The one commandment that we are to follow.
Love the Lord your God.
And
without your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself.
And that's what Ruth was living. Okay, let's look at the verses. That's just all pumping you up and gets ready. All right. So chapter one, what themes are is simply you look for the subjects involved in a chapter, the subjects, and look at what subject may be predominant. So in chapter one, what do you think the predominant subject would be?
The death of Naomi's family.
Well, okay, so that's part of it. That's mm-hmm. And what's the outcome of that?
Returning to Bethlehem.
Grieving.
Okay. So how would you say that in around four words or in that vicinity?
Ruth goes with Naomi. Four words?
Or Ruth won't leave Naomi. Mm-hmm.
Widows return to Bethlehem.
Well, that's good. From Moabite, from Moab, maybe, and that would say it. There is no right way. Remember, what is the purpose for us doing a title?
To remember.
For us to remember.
So we can find it, so I can say where it is, so I can understand, so I can contain that book, and that's one of the best ways to do it, because if you start with the skeleton, which is what your table of contents is, and you start visualizing in your own head what else came in that chapter. So this is a chapter where Ruth and Moab, or the widows, I like that. The widows leave Moab to Judah. I would say Judah is shorter.
Yeah.
I get it on something. How about chapter two? What would you guys put for chapter two? Remembering, what are some of the, let me ask that, what are some of the themes or subjects in chapter 2?
Ruth's gleaning.
Okay, Ruth is gleaning. What else do we get introduced there? Introduced to there in verse 1?
Boaz.
You have Boaz, but who is he?
Kinsman.
He's a kinsman. So we have the introduction to the word kinsman there. So we have Ruth gleaning.
I put Boaz a kinsman and Ruth gleaning is
that
basically
works.
All I.
That works right there. But like I said, if you go through this, you're going to add a lot to it. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly what Boaz the kinsman, Ruth gleaning. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how they meet in essence.
I put Ruth gleans, meets Boaz, kinsman Boaz.
Yep. That's, those two parts are your subjects. Your subjects are, because again, how do you find your subjects? Who, what, where, when, why, and how? What is talked about the most? Or what is the focus of this thing? And the focus of this thing is Ruth is gleaning. Did she go for Boaz's land?
No.
She ended up there. So there's God in there too, you know? God sneaks in. He sneaks in. He still has that oversight no matter what.
He planned it. My Jewish friend told me there's no word for coincidence in Hebrew. And so all these things that happen or whatever are still God orchestrated.
As Christians, we know that. We didn't catch him unawares. Not ever. In fact, he's been there for 1,000 years before we even got there. And more. I mean, our situation. He already knew how it was all going to land out. In fact, when you think about God and this story, what did you learn about God by just Ruth and Naomi and Boaz's stories?
She's
in control. He plans things because he brought this about.
But here it brings blessing.
But did Naomi think that in the middle of it?
No.
What did she think?
Empty.
I'm empty.
Harsh. Never be good again.
God is harsh. And he does. The thing is can we see the beauty when we're looking at the ashes? I mean, that's in our own lives. If all I feel is I'm in the middle of ashes, which their life brings, can I let God show me the beauty in the middle of that ashes?
Do you look at God instead of the ashes?
Well, even in that, I have to know that He is doing something. And I may not understand it, but that's where I can stand. How can I worship God in the middle of the ashes by acknowledging just who He is? I may not understand where this is going. I mean, you couldn't have been a Christian during World War II in the middle of Germany wanting to follow the Lord and thinking that any good thing could come out of this, because it was horrible. I mean, for some reason, reading more on World War II, I didn't start out trying to do that. I don't like war at all. But there are stories in wars and people's lives. And we just saw, I think I told you last week, we just saw it wasn't a documentary. It was actually a movie. It was more like a documentary of Hitler's last days. And the focus is on all the people. And I can't, it was just overwhelming to me to see how they had invested in him, in essence, as God. And when he started failing, they did not know what to do with themselves. They committed suicide, like, massive, because if he was going to die, then there was nothing else. Well, and these people probably went to church on Sunday. That's the saddest part of it, having a lot of German relatives, being very aware that the church did not take an antithetical statement to what went on. Some individuals did, but they didn't stand up. When Bonhoeffer tried to stand up, he lost his life. So, I mean, and there were others, not just him. So again, there is the little picture I'm living that may be looking like ashes, but there is the big picture I need to seek. Read Psalm 107. You get your antithesis. You go back and forth, and God is in the midst, and he keeps waiting for them to turn to him. Okay, chapter 3. Any questions? Because we already did 1 and 2.
I was just going to say, it changes your perspective. Naomi was looking at what God had taken away, or what had been taken away. It changes your perspective completely. Yes, if you look at who God is or what you know about God, but also look at what you have left.
Well, and you think that Ruth and Naomi had a different picture.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well,
why?
Well, for one thing, she was young, and she had her life ahead of her.
But I don't think she was looking at that, because she was giving up her life to take care of this old lady.
But at the same time, Naomi is saying, look what he's done, I have nothing, I'm empty, and Ruth, I can picture Ruth standing there and going,
I'm here, about me.
How about me?
Plus,
I'm here, I'm leaving everything.
Plus, she was raised with what kind of gods? They killed the babies.
Killed the babies, yeah.
So here is Ruth, even though Naomi may be complaining, Ruth is seeing a God who loves her. And that's a huge difference. So Naomi is coming from, I have a right to have blah, 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 whatever it is. And Ruth was coming from a place of, oh my gosh, I didn't know this existed. So again, chapter 3. What are some of the subjects in chapter 3?
Boaz and the closest relative.
Okay, so what is that?
Kinsman redeemer.
Let's look at verse 1, because we're going to start with that eventually anyway. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? I want you to look, hold your place there, and look at chapter 1, verse 9. We're looking for the word that I'm going to do here, is security. It's the exact same Greek word is used, but it's not translated the same. So let's see what it says. This, may the Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. Okay, so the word rest, 9. We go to 3. and says, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? What is she talking about if you put those two sentences together?
Well, the word security here literally in the side margin means rest.
Yes, it does. What's she resting from or into? Is it a from or an into?
Into.
And what is she resting into?
God's
so what
provision.
Is marriage, the picture of marriage in the Old Testament for a woman?
Provision.
This is your security. This is your place of resting. You know, you could go on for hours on that one. But if, is it any different in the New Testament? Is it any different in our time? Granted, not everybody is married. I'm not going on that one. I'm just talking about marriage. What is marriage to be?
Covenant.
Covenant? It's to be a security. I need to be able to trust my husband is going to be faithful, that he is going to try and provide. Now, I can't always. I remember when Kim and Dan were struggling with Dan's back, and there were periods where he simply could not work. And I know that, and you went to work, which you did not want to do. But there are times that you have to do these things. So it's not an anti-working, because did Ruth continue working? Sure. Mm-hmm. Any of us have raised kids and taken care of property. No, you never stop working. But the picture was, this is my place in society. Because in their society, what do you know about how they treated women?
Well, when... I was laughing. Chapter 3 is all romantic, right? He lays his feet and covers the blanket. Chapter 4, he went to acquire Ruth, but he talks about the land first.
Well, he has to go that route.
I know, but it was such a contrast when I read it. I know, but... cover me! And then he goes to the town. I'm going to buy this land, and it's all about the land, buying land.
Oh,
and
by the way.
By the way, Ruth goes to the land.
This is not Daniel. What's her name? Danielle Steele. This is God's verse.
I'm Hugh Hefner's house, and he gets to live there till he dies. You get the house, but you get him too.
This guy, well, Hugh Hefner, I'd rather die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I just meant it. Women.
Don't want to go down that road. But her. What is the security? What is the rest? What is it? What is bringing security? Don't just say that's copping out on me.
The sons.
It's the inheritance.
So she has her place in history, doesn't she?
When you're old, your sons would take care of you. That was the culture.
But to Jewish people, it is very important. In fact, what is one of the biggest struggles that the Jewish people have today? They don't know where they came from because they can't find their family tribes anymore. I mean, the Mormons like to keep saying they found the missing tribes, but that's a bunch of balderdash, said she nicely. Why did God eliminate that heritage that they held on so desperately, knowing what they were of?
Because the Messiah has come.
Because the Messiah has come, and it's done. It is finished. There is no more. There was a purpose that we studied all the way back in Genesis. You have such a question sitting on your face. What is it?
He wants to be our heritage. He is our heritage.
That's right.
He wants us to look to him as our heritage.
Well, is that not the point of the genealogies?
Yes.
From all the way in the beginning. Remember I told you back in Genesis in 3:15 when it talked about the seed and goes into the covenant, the seed, well, the seed is Christ, and the point of it of Israel, period, was to protect the seed and the genealogies so that the world could see where Jesus came from. So once he's there, it's finished, and we know that the temple was destroyed in 60 AD, 70 AD, And it was all done because that's where all that information was kept. Okay, so back to our little picture. We keep developing the big picture and the little picture. So in chapter 3, now, is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor. So what's the background that we've come up to get to chapter 3?
She is out there in the fields with his maids, gleaning.
And what has he done? What has he done once he observed her? Because he observed her, didn't he? In fact, he went to his, whatever he was, and asked him about her. Who is she?
He showed grace to her and allowed her to glean more, allowed Petal to leave down grain for her so she could have more.
He even left sheaves out, which gleaners don't get the sheaves. They get what's on the ground.
Right.
They get the really leftovers, and he put out food for her. Now, in a funny way, he's wooing her. Because we already said, why didn't he go out and just redeem her right away? Because he was old, and because there was somebody else. And he didn't know if she was would have been interested in that. So he's just watching over her as, I mean, that's what the modern day movement on the whole, what's it called, Kim? Where people, well,
more context.
working on getting married. Never mind. It'll come someday. It'll come about 2:00 in the morning. I'll call you all up.
Email us.
Working on getting married.
According. Yeah. Thank you.
Courtship. Yeah.
Just courting. So he is courting her, even though she doesn't know it. He is wooing slowly her heart. He's taken this young girl and turned her eyes towards him. But he's doing it in a very godly, gracious way.
Do you think that he might be doing that because he knows that she's the daughter-in-law of Naomi?
Yes, he says that from the beginning.
Yeah. So he's taking care of both of them?
Yes.
Through Ruth?
He's a good man. Mm-hmm. And you can see he's checking behind the scenes to figure all of this out. And he's got it figured out that he can't redeem it if this other guy wants to. But do you see any, I'm going to use the word manipulation, if you can detach from yourself, manipulation is always bad because it's not. Jesus manipulated the Pharisees all the time. But how is he manipulating that situation? Once it's acknowledged, how does he approach the situation with this other guy who actually has a right of closer relative?
He's offering him some bait. Here's some land. And it's
what
yours.
What doesn't he tell you right away? And you can have it.
Yeah, Ruth comes along
and
with it.
And by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going to have to give up that first baby. You know, all of a sudden he brings it to a place that he's maybe not willing to go. But he doesn't start there. He doesn't start with Ruth. He starts with the land and then drops Ruth. I think that's
well, he brings the elders there, so there's witnesses and everything, so the guy can't change his mind.
Right. Well, and he brings more witnesses than is required by law. I mean, 10 witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Elders.
Yeah, the elders.
He wants to make sure this goes down right.
So he manipulated well. He did a good, darn good job.
He studied his basis.
He did. Anything that could have happened.
Yeah.
What's the sandal thing?
It seals the deal.
How?
Do they get to keep the sandal, right?
Huh?
They don't keep the sandal.
What they used to do when they bought land was to take their own sandal and plant it in the ground on the land. But see, that isn't what happened. So what did the other guy do? He took what would have been a sandal he would have put in the ground.
And gave it to Boaz.
And gave it to Boaz so he could have the land. And that sandal is the proof.
Yeah. It's kind of like a contract.
He signed the contract. That's the receipt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I have to picture you right over there.
Oh,
hope there's no glass on the floor.
Bring a spare pair of flip flops and go to buy them.
I'm picturing a stinky shoe.
They kept
it.
Yeah.
Well, because later on that would prove, because how everybody would know, of course, that was the other guy's sandal.
Maybe it was just symbolic.
This is a buying of land. That's a pretty important deal. So
imagine if we did that today.
Which is why he didn't need a sandal if he wasn't away.
We'd come visit her, though, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would. I'd bring her a vial.
It makes no sense, honestly, to be symbolic.
It was the manner of
it. I don't want it.
Okay, so we're back to chapter 3 again. We keep guiding ourselves in other places. So the servant charged the reapers. Am I in the right chapter? Yeah, I am. Servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is a young Moabite who has returned with Naomi from the land of Moab."
No, that's... Where are you at?
I'm at 2?
Yeah.
Just a minute. I'll tell you if I'm still here.
Are you ready to lay down at the flesh?
Oh, you're right. I was 2. Okay. That's because I was looking at 1:9. All right. So, wash yourself now. Now, does Naomi understand? Does Ruth understand what Naomi understands about this whole process?
No, not really, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either, because it's not her culture.
And she's about to get an education.
Yes.
She understands what to say. She knows what to ask for.
She gets a step every way. Let's look at verse 3. Wash yourself, therefore, so she's cleaning out the bait.
And make yourself pretty.
And anoint yourself and put on your best clothes. Your Sunday best, Sabbath best or something, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. So he's eating and drinking. Well, how do you feel at the end of eating and drinking? Well, let's look. It says, it shall be when he lies down, you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet, and then he will tell you what you shall do. So, in a sense, Ruth is doing this kind of blind. It's a weird thing. I mean, the first time I read this, like, what the heck are they doing?
Blind date.
You know? And I struggled with it. Like, is this a sexual thing? No, it's not. It's a presentation of possible marriage.
I think she figures. Don't you think she probably knew a little more than that? Because, verse 1, Naomi's saying, shouldn't I see security for you? So it's kind of like,
right,
this is how we're doing it. And wash and put your best clothes on and go down there and do that. And he's been good to you and giving you all this extra grain and stuff to bring home. Do you think she's figuring out?
Well, I think she's figuring out to some level, but she doesn't know what her responsibility is in the middle of this.
No, she's just doing what she's told, because that's the way it works.
I don't go around uncovering men's feet.
and laying down by them.
Yeah, by their feet. Yes.
Yeah. Laying at their feet.
So there was something in that culture that she was beginning to learn, and she was taking this in. And she said to her, "All that you say, I will do." So for Ruth, what are you learning about here about the relationship between her and Naomi?
She completely trusted Naomi.
Totally.
Yes. Obedient. She didn't even ask, why do I have to do this?
And that's kind of gross. And what if he's just been working out in the fields? And usually you don't think of the landowner as being with all the reapers and the... They're staying at the house and giving orders, and he doesn't do that. So he's there.
Well, and she's especially trusting, too, because she's coming from a different culture, she has no idea. Is Naomi asking me to be like his...
Like a concubine?
Harlot there? What am I doing by doing that? She doesn't say, because Naomi doesn't tell her. This is going to get you a husband, or she doesn't say that. Just tells her what to do, and says it'll be security. And it's like, I'm not sure if I want that kind of security. She doesn't know.
But she's obedient.
Yes.
And she's obedient to Naomi. Yes. So she's trusting Naomi. Yep. So in that sense, Naomi has shown herself to be trustworthy to her.
Yeah.
And we see that again, like from chapter 1:9 and on. He is the security, and the husband is the rest, and she is looking for what is right for her, but she doesn't really understand how that all works. Verse 6, so she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. Notice she didn't say suggest. Verse 7, when Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was merry. He went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." So she was acknowledging what he already knew, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think Naomi knew that there was another relative closer, another close relative that was closer than Boaz, but she chose? Naomi chose Boaz to approach
Boaz. I don't know if that's the route, which it could be, but also the fact that he is the one that God's brought forth. Because they're just following processes, and processes they need to eat. So Ruth is gleaning, and she ends up in Boaz's property. So Naomi is using what's in front of her. I don't know whether she knew or not. Obviously, Boaz knew, so it must be a known situation.
Well, when they came back and said the whole town was stirred up, you'd think that nearest relative would say, "Oh, gee, my responsibility is here." We don't see any of that.
And you know his wife was encouraging that.
Yeah, right. Not.
Yes. Again, there's stories we don't know anything about, isn't it? Those are still part of the story, but we know nothing about them and really can't find anything about them.
So Naomi must have told her a little more before she went, because she's the one that's saying, "It's me, Ruth. Spread your covering over me." So she knew that was supposed to happen.
Right.
Well, she knew he was a close relative, too.
Right.
Yeah. But again, that's not her culture, and that's not necessarily the way they did it from her culture. She's learning that from
Naomi.
Naomi
must have told her.
But she knows that.
She told her,
he'll
tell you what to do.
Right. Whatever it meant.
Yeah, back in verse 2, she tells her Boaz is our kinsman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think that verse 9, "spread your covering over me," is a very significant phrase.
Very much so.
And Ruth knew what she was saying when she said it, because she must have told her.
And I think she had enough of even Judaism, because what does it mean in Judaism to spread your covering over me? Christian, what does it mean to you?
Protection.
Well, she was married to a Jewish man. Right. She had to have known some of them.
One assumes, we already know that judges didn't pass them on, because they were all doing what was right in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. So, we don't know how much she knows, but obviously you can glean out of parts that you do get. Whatever it was, she knew that it was a major thing. Whatever it was stating. He said, "Who are you?" And she said, "You are our close relative." So, and we went to Ezekiel. What did you learn about in Ezekiel that was supposed to be giving you the same picture of marriage, specifically in verse 8? God's talking about Israel here.
That's on page 9. That question is page 9.
Well, I should say also, it's Ezekiel 16:1-8, and then 20 and 22. Somebody want to read verse 8?
"And I passed by you and saw you, and behold, you were at the time for love, so I spread my skirt over you and covered your nakedness. I also swore to you and entered into a covenant with you, so that you became mine, declares the Lord God."
And then 20 and 32.
"Moreover, you took your sons and daughters whom you had born to me and sacrifices them to idols to be devoured, where your harlotries so small in matter? Were your harlotries so small in matter? You adulteress's wife who took strangers instead of her husband."
So what is that talking about? We're in Ezekiel here. This is where they lose the Shekinah glory.
They're talking about the Israelites turning against God and doing things of other gods, cultures of other gods.
What does it mean they sacrificed their children?
That was part of the Baal worship, wasn't it?
It was Molech.
Molech.
But I think it even means more than that, because you don't have to really physically sacrifice a child to be sacrificing a child. Just don't teach them anything.
Yeah, they weren't passing down, doing the instructions that God had given them from the get-go, pass down the law and traditions, not traditions, but the stories.
Truth. I mean, if they have no truth, what do they have?
No, they don't have anything.
They have what's going on around them.
Yeah.
And so you end up, you adopt this wife who takes strangers instead of her husband. Well, you have no context for what's right.
They follow after other gods.
Which we know they did.
Pagan idols and stuff.
So take that back to Ruth, who doesn't have this history. But what was she doing? He said, you're not taking for yourself the young men, even the rich men. So what is he saying about her?
He's saying that's a good thing.
She's choosing to do it God's way.
Right. And this is obvious who God has chosen for her. So, and again, this goes back so opposite of what we think in our culture and how we choose our mates.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, some people probably look at character versus appearance.
Yes.
Or else some people wouldn't get married, right?
Let's, and if you're a believer, let's hope that is the result. But I'm talking more having it set up. We didn't have our relationships, most of us, set up. Although I have to say, I watched Lauren and Tanner. It was pretty hilarious in a good way. Because Tanner said to me when he was 9 that he loved her and that he would marry her one day.
That's what you get for not moving away.
We didn't ever tell her. Did I ever tell you?
You kind of told my mom too as well.
Well, yeah, it kind of had to be because when it came closer, what did he ask? Wasn't he 12 when he asked you if he could marry her then?
Oh, he was talking about her. Yeah.
He asked permission when he was 12. And I was like, boy.
Then he watched for a few years.
And prayed. He prayed for a long time for her.
Yeah.
That was his heart. He deserved getting you. He's the only boy I would have allowed.
You had control.
I did. How well you know me?
We were talking about manipulation earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you don't want that one. Okay. So, verse 10. Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than your first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." So he's lifting her character up first. And then verse 12, now it is true. However, there is a closer relative, and I remain this night, and when morning comes, he will redeem you good, if he will redeem you good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. So that was his response. What was his response? She's getting more lessons again, isn't she?
Well, and he's being so honorable and kind to her. I mean, she's just looking at herself as, I'm just a maid, I'm just a servant, I'm a foreigner, and he's calling her a kind person, that she's been, this last kindness is better than the first. He's calls her a woman of excellence, and calls her his daughter, and that, all of those things must have been so affirming to her and uplifting. And
well, it's something you carry and hold with you the rest of your marriage, remembering how you were treated.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why did he have her wait till morning? Believe.
Well, he happened safe to go home. Yeah, he's safe to walk the street.
Yes, those scoundrel males are out there, and he didn't want her in the middle of that.
Worthless fellows.
Worthless fellows. Yes. Nice girl. Okay. Did we chat? I didn't write any of it down. Did we title chapter 3?
No.
No.
Okay. What was it? What were some of the titles? What was it?
Grace of Hope. She has the good ones today.
She does.
Well, what she does well that I've never been able to do well is she can get it down to close to 4. I do 62. I redo the entire chapter and put it as a title.
There you go.
What did you say?
And she can spell it correctly.
How would any of us know?
That's true. Tell us.
Boaz, the kinsman, with Ruth on the threshing floor.
Okay, wait a minute, I had two of them going at the same time.
Oh.
Stereo, she actually started. Go ahead.
Boaz, with the kinsman, with Ruth on the threshing floor.
Okay.
I just put Ruth lays at feet of close relative.
Mm-hmm. You know, just so you guys know, there are people out there who do all these titlings. Let me give you the what's his name? I wrote his name down. J. Sidwell Baxter. For Ruth 1, he wrote, Love's Resolve. Now, that's really short. But I don't think it would help me
remember.
Ruth 2, Love's Response. That might. Ruth 3, Love's Request.
And he carried the theme of love all the way through.
Right, and it's only used once, so you can see it's fairly important. And 4, he says, love's reward. So there are, but again, I'm not sure love's response is going to help me know exactly what's going on in that chapter. So personally, I like a little bit more of the meat.
I like something that sticks out to me, so that I can read it.
Which is why you don't worry about how anybody else wrote it, even Grace.
Right. Don't do as I do.
Do what I say.
It's got to be something that sticks out in your mind.
Because it's your table of contents for the book.
Right.
Whatever. Because that's the goal. You have to remember, what is the goal in these things? Is it just to do something else, or no? It's another tool to make the book tangible to me.
It's the same way with the marking. I have to mark the words and with ways that we go, I will recognize whenever that this is what this is. My mark.
Absolutely. That's why the marks on the back of your book are simply suggestions.
Yeah.
And there are some people who never look at that because they love to draw and everything else, and there are other people who like hold to it like it was life. Because they're not visual people. Okay. So, we're song 3, aren't we? Okay.
4.
No, I think we're on. We finished verse 9.
We're at like 13, 14-ish.
Yes.
On the back.
Number 3?
We're on 14. 14, okay. Yeah, we're on 14.
Because we're talking about how
14.
How he didn't send her home during the night because of the
diagnosis. And we're talking about Redeemer, and he is saying that there is a closer relative, but if he says no, then I will redeem you. So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Why would that be important for her reputation? Why?
It looks like she's throwing herself at him.
Well, she could have just been a prostitute. Mm-hmm. And nobody really knows what she was in Moab.
Right.
Right? So she's still showing Israel her reputation, and he knew how to continue protecting that. Verse 15 again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. And then she went to the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all the things the man had done for her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me. For he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. So, who is it really for?
Naomi.
Why?
So she would know.
So that she would be
encouraged.
Kind of like a dowry.
Yeah, I think it is like a dowry. I think it's a down payment in that sense.
Yeah, and it's not just the grain. I mean, he gave her his cloak. So.
It was her cloak. Well, I don't know whether it was or he laid
in verse 9.
You know what? I think he did. It was his idea.
In verse 9, she says, so spread your covering over your maid.
Yeah.
She doesn't say, wrap me up in my own cloak
right.
that I came
so
with.
When so when she goes home and hands that much barley, it's in his cloak,
in his
which
cloak.
Says he's making a commitment.
Mm-hmm. Could
How
it also
cool
be
that?
Showing Naomi that he will take care of her too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it does, because it's her land.
Yeah.
Now think about that. Let's translate that into our day. Present. We go till 11:45. Pass it into our day. What is our covering?
Christ.
Christ.
What part of what?
The blood.
The blood of
blood.
Christ.
The blood of Christ. In fact, when God looks down on us, He sees us covered, and it's
Christ,
that's
Christ.
Called redemption. That's the atonement. The atonement is made for us. I don't know whether we're going to be talking about that next week or not. I assume we are, because we just went through all the chapters in the first lesson.
Believe it or not.
Okay. So, and she says, and then verse 18, then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out. This is where they don't do anything.
Yeah.
She had her part to play. She did her part, both of them.
Now it's up to the man.
Now it's up to him.
Charlene shared with me a very interesting thing about the whole six thing. Charlene, you want to tell them about that? The importance of that six measures of barley?
Well, for the Jewish Naomi, she would understand. Because the six measures are equivalent to the 6 days of work. Boaz's work was not finished.
Very good.
He would not rest until that seventh day when he talked to the other close relative.
Where did you learn this?
It didn't come here. It happened that this week two of the pastors on CSN were studying in the Book of Ruth.
And he
brought that out, that Naomi would know that in a moment. Didn't mean a thing to Ruth.
No, it wouldn't.
But and the very fact that another thing he brought out that was that six measures is an equivalent to 30 gallons of dry measure.
Would be heavy.
Yeah.
But so if you know people in those lands, I was saying, I thought, why, that's heavy, but in Venezuela, the women would a mother would come up with a baby in one arm and put the baby down and fill up the 5-gallon can with water. She put it on her head, pick up the baby, and have something in her other hand, and that's 40 pounds.
And how
on
were
her
their
head.
Necks when they hit 10 years of doing that?
Yeah. But they
see, I
can
do
balance.
That in strength, but
yeah.
my neck would be pulverized.
Yeah. But,
if you do it every day, you build up.
Not,
yeah.
not
and
your
so
bones done.
I don't know how far Ruth had to go into the city, but nevertheless, probably with his strong cloak, her veil might not be able to hold all that
True.
Barley.
But I think but that the cloak was cloak. Also that symbol of he is making that commitment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like that. You have to tell us more that you learned as we go along.
I thought that was significant because she said, and you knew that Naomi understood that because she said he'll not rest until it's settled. Mm-hmm.
And that rest
that
means
cool.
he will not be quiet or tranquil. He will not stop going forward, basically. So any comments on that chapter? Now it's in his hands.
Chapter 4.
And that's kind of important because he's really the one who needs to make all those decisions, isn't it?
Kid, I have a question, though.
Uh-oh.
When he gave the sandal to the man,
right.
that was the contract
closing the
side.
Deal.
But what was, and this is a rabbit trail, but
okay.
what was the contract when he gave it to a woman she could spit in his face in other contracts?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, because it
I have
talk
you look it up,
that.
But you're blind as a bat.
Yeah, if I don't hear it, I can't see it.
Yeah, because that was the other part of that kind of a contract.
That's that other part of the contract. And
was,
I thought,
right.
But the men didn't spit at each other.
No, the
but
woman,
the woman had
yes.
the right.
Was that her way of just saying no?
No. No, when he refused to redeem her.
It was a refusal. So it wasn't a
response.
Actually, let's read from seven. But if the man does not desire to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. He is not willing to perform the duty of a husband's brother to me. Then the elders of his city shall summon him to speak to him. And if he persists and says, I do not desire to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in sight of all the elders, and pull off his sandal, off his foot, and spit in his face. She shall declare, thus the man who does not fill up his brother's house.
Oh, I know that one. It'd be the same way here if I spit in somebody's face. What am I doing? Disgracing, humiliating, and she takes power and control over the situation, so nobody looks at her and thinks, oh, that poor woman. They say, she did it. She took care of it. And because he was being humiliating. He was humiliating her by not accepting the situation for whatever reason. It could have been because he didn't want, you know, he's punishing his dead brother. It could be that he thought his wife was ugly as sin. It could have been that he just didn't want to have a seed with anyone else but his own wife. I don't know, but whatever it was, he was going against the law of the Levirate. The law of the Levirate. Mm-hmm. Anybody else got anything to add to that or question? You got a smirk on your face.
I was just thinking he just didn't want a second wife. He couldn't handle the first one.
Yeah. I often wonder why those, other than the sexual thing or trying to build up a huge base, why the heck would any guy want two wives? What's wrong with that first wife? She evidently is not giving him enough help.
What happens if nobody wants her?
Well, she just got back her dignity. And in truth, I don't know. There has to be some...
Would it just keep going down the line? None of the kings wouldn't want
I
wonder in this instance, because Boaz and this other were the only relatives left.
Right. Well, that's the relatives we know of. Boaz was second in line, so
they were
talking
closer.
About going past that.
Yeah. Right. It would keep going. I mean, we learned that in the later chapter.
That they not marry outside the family.
Right.
In a later
and the land,
lesson.
So that the land would stay in the family. Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems like Boaz protected Ruth by not having her be humiliated by just going himself instead of having her come.
Well, she's not supposed to be part of that. That's the elders.
But she's
it'd be just like even in our culture here, and when there are certain church things that go on, mm-hmm. it's the men, the elders, that make those decisions, and at least it's supposed to be that way. And then they tell us what the outcome of that is. Our culture bucks against that, but it's pretty biblical. Part of the reason that women aren't elders. Anyway, go ahead. Okay, you think about that one, Bonnie, and give me a call. You should sit up here for a while. It's hilarious watching people's faces.
It's the pondering.
I know she questions everything I say anyway because she's my friend. But
it's true, though, that there's different faces that believe differently. Salvation is one.
Go ahead. That's a very verbal person that's saying that, too. I'm not verbal.
Since the line that went down to David was Ruth's son, I was just wondering, was Boaz possibly maybe even not married before? I know he was old, but was that his first son?
That's kind
of
what I keep thinking, too. But
the line would have been through that son?
Doesn't sound like he's married. It doesn't have any connotations of having a wife.
That seems like that wouldn't have been normal.
Except
it wasn't a normal situation to be the son of a woman who's dubbed Rahab the harlot.
That's true.
Yeah. He also could have been a widower. We don't know.
Don't know.
Just like it's with Paul. There are things in the New Testament that give us the idea that Paul was married, but you never see a wife, so people will think he's a widower, but did God tell us that? No, so we don't need to worry about it one way or the other. You know, that's all in his hands. What he tells us is what we hold on to.
And this closest relative, I don't actually see anywhere where he was married. It's just that he wants his inheritance when it's time for it. And if he takes Ruth, then he loses his inheritance.
Well, his firstborn. I don't think it goes past the firstborn, but I don't really know that either. Again, that's not something that's... It does say successor. Doesn't say successors or children. I looked at that pretty carefully, but it's not specific enough. I like it to say, and it's just the first one, not the second, third, not, you know, but it doesn't say that. So he took the, Boaz went up to the gate and sat down, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, turn aside, friend, and sit down. You know he set this up, you just have no idea how he did it, because the guy is there, and he's got all the elders ready. Turn aside, friend, sit down here, and he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. So they sat down, I would assume, there. And he said to the closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belongs to her brother, Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it. Oh, there is no one.
That tells you there's no other people.
See, that's what I said. It's just him and Boaz.
Except for that he's saying that to him. There's no one to redeem it but you, and there's him.
Did anybody look up a brother? Is it like a real brother, or is it just like a little Jews?
Which word?
Brother. Which belonged to our brother in Lamech.
No, it's sort of a collective ancestry kind of word.
Actually.
Yeah. Because Naomi would have known that for sure, right?
Well, and by saying there's no one but you to redeem it, I'm wondering, I mean, we're not told, but I'm wondering if he means in terms of the close. There's you, and then I'm after you.
Right.
And then there's somebody after Boaz.
But we don't look at that now, because we're just talking about the two of us here.
Right.
Again, God tells us what he wants us to know and leaves us in limbo with what he doesn't.
Yep.
So we can do all this speculation.
Yeah. and it's okay, guys, as long as you understand it's speculation. I am always surprised how people can come out of studying the Bible and come up with all sorts of ideas as if it's true when it's not. It's just speculation. It may be true. But it could be not true, too. So Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess. Moabitess.
Yeah, but just before that, the closest relative said, I will redeem it.
Right.
So he agreed to redeem it.
Which was the hook.
And then, but then he recants.
Yeah.
With the Moabitess.
Yeah, that's the hook that Boaz wanted him to.
The widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name, of the deceased on his inheritance.
Right.
Well, maybe I'm not willing to do that. The closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my own inheritance, and I don't really know why it would. To tell you the truth.
And where do you get this in here?
Well, it's if you were a boy, a male, in Israel, the land is passed on. So if I have
this is not from his wife.
No. But we do know that there was one story with 12 daughters or something where they actually were able to have the land because there was no brother. I mean, really, to me, there's a lot I would talk to God about on this one, but... One of it has to do with if your brothers don't take care of you, you're sort of out in the field by yourself after dad dies. They did that in England, too, and I have a feeling that was the English were doing that thinking they were following the biblical picture. The oldest male gets everything. Uh-huh. Well, you have 12 kids. There's a lot of loss there. The mother, you know, if the son doesn't want to take care of the mother, doesn't have to.
Okay, and I have another dumb question. Why would he lose his inheritance if he...
That's what I don't understand, because he still has his land. And that son, maybe it's the picture that son... This is what I don't know. That son may inherit the whole thing. I don't know that.
It's his firstborn as well. Maybe he had
another. Yeah, if it's his first... born. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe he didn't want him. So that goes back to Grace's question, is he doesn't tell us if he's married or not. So, verse 6, the closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have the right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. Verse 7, now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm any manner. That says former times, so I don't know why it says that. Maybe, oh, it's from the perspective of the writing. So in David's time, maybe it doesn't do it this way. To confirm any manner, man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in, how do you say that?
Attestation.
In Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, and he removed his sandal. Verse 9, then Boaz said to the elders and the people, you are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, whatever his name is, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers. And again, that is a picture of their tribes. Yeah. Or from the court of his birthplace, you are witnesses today. All the people who were in the court and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman. It was interesting, I looked up Perez and Zerah, his twin, and it tells which families came out of them. Out of Perez came the Hezronites and the Hemulites, which I didn't know, and it says that the Hezronites came the royal line of David and Christ. And then Zerah, who was the twin brother of Perez, spelled differently, the son of Judah and Tamar, descendants are called the Zerahites, Ezrahites, and the Israelites. There you go. Not that I have any clue what any of those peoples do. So, by the time we are in this chapter, we looked at the law of the Levirate, right? So, verse 13, Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, blessed is the Lord, who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life, a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him. Now, who said that? It's sort of like a prophecy.
The women.
The women. Of the same ones who Naomi came in and called herself Mara, and that God had sort of abandoned her. These are the ones who kind of turned it around and showed her what God is really doing. Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap, and she became his nurse, which is a teacher. The verb meaning to be firm, to build up, to support or nurture or establish. The primary meaning is that of providing stability and confidence like a baby would find in the arms of a parent. Metaphorically, the word conveys the notion of faithfulness and trustworthiness. I had to look that up anyway. The neighbor gave him a name, saying, the neighbor gave him a name. Isn't that interesting?
Neighbor women. And he's not named Elimelech. Well, is there to build up his name? Is they're all right. Talking about the father's name, but they don't name him that.
No.
Or Mahlon or whatever.
A son has been born to Naomi, so they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse and the father of David. And again, that tells us when this book was written. Did anybody look up the name Obed, what it meant?
Worshipper.
Serving and worshipper, yes. Yep.
Now the child is, so the child is the redeemer. When I was reading that, at first it was like Boaz was the next of kin, and then the child, and what thought went through my mind is the father is the one who provides the redeemer, and then the child, the son of God, is in the...
It is, and it is a picture of foretelling and forthtelling. So you have prophecy here, but you also have the reality of that day and age. And that's the way most prophecy is. Prophecy is giving a presentation to people of this day and age that they're speaking in, but also they're giving a picture of something coming. When we look at like Christ as being born of a virgin, that word virgin in Hebrew is not the same word for virgin that we use in the New Testament, but when it was translated in the New Testament, it was translated with the only word that means virgin. So in that day and age, it's just talking about a woman having a child. But the foretelling is talking about a child born of a virgin. And it's kind of cool to read those things and understand how God has this all in his hands and how we miss so much if we don't think about these things. But anyway.
That was one of the things that I learned too. Paris was illegitimate. And in the Jewish history, an illegitimate child to the 10th generation,
just like the Moabites,
was not in the assembly or could not be honored. David was the 10th generation from Paris, and he became king of Israel.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Isn't it amazing how God arranges that? But the people weren't ready to wait for David, so they chose Saul.
Which did such wonderful things to them, right? Mm-hmm. And followed God exclusively. Oh no, that's not him. No, they weren't, but they demanded one. Verse 18, now these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Gerzon, to Gerzon was born Ram, to Ram Amminadab, and to Amminadab was born Nahshon, and Nahshon Salmon, or Salmon, whichever we want to do. To Salmon was born Boaz, and Boaz Obed, and to was born Jesse, and Jesse David. And that is the genealogy of, as you said, from Perez. But when you go back, you get another 10.
Yeah.
The other way.
That's one. That's two.
We can take our time and wave, can't we?
You're so cute.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for letting us interrupt me.
Oh, you're not interrupting us.
You're so quiet.
I'm missing you.
So we're actually done 5 minutes early. Have anything you can pray for? Batteries? And what else are we going to pray for?
Well, Helen and Corey are at UW.
Because they are the daughters today.
So the mouth help deal with her.
Yeah.
We can also pray for Helen. Just she didn't have me put it on the prayer chain, so I'm going to be a mouthy friend and give it here. They need over $2,000 for a bed for Corey. So let's just pray. Lord God, we just come to you, our Father. You who gives and gives and gives, Father, and you teach us of yourself and you show us how you had things in control long before they got out of control. You knew what was going to happen and you use your purposes in our lives to help us see you and trust you more and open our hearts more to you and learn about your names and your actions and your character. And Father, we want to love you with all we are. We can't manufacture that. You have to clean the dross out of our life, and that's what we ask for, Lord, that we shine with the mind of Christ, with the life of Christ, with a commitment to Jesus, the commitment to you, through the power of the Holy Spirit. We also ask, Lord, we do have prayers on our hearts. Most of them are silent in this room, and I ask, Lord, that you would hear them and teach us and open our minds to you. And we also ask for this battery that needs to be replaced, Lord. You know how much it costs, and it costs something we can bring to you. So we bring this to you and ask, Lord, that you help provide, or provide fully. It's up to you to take care of this. And also, as the doctors go in and do this, and I know it's a fairly simple, but anytime you go inside a body, it doesn't seem that simple to me. So, God, would you protect from infection our blessed sister, and comfort her heart knowing that she is in your hands as well as she's in the doctor's hands, and you are over the doctor. And we pray this for Helen as she keeps, Lord, and has these terrible migraines, and she has holes in her bone and where her mouth closes that cause this. And God, I would ask that you do what it takes. I don't really understand it. That you would do what is best for her to be able to regain the use of being able to chew without going into massive migraines. God, comfort her heart and let her know right now, this moment, that you are there with her, that you will never leave her nor will you forsake her. We also ask for this family that you would provide financing for that bed for Corey. We thank you that his tests came out so well, and realize that what is causing all this is the GERDs that he has, and that he needs a bed to lift him up so the acid out of his stomach just doesn't go up into everything else. We thank you, God, that you are merciful. We are amazed, Lord, what you do and what you can do, and how you use these very failures of our human bodies to glorify yourself and teach us of you. So again, Lord, teach us. Show us. Help our hearts worship. Help our minds be committed to learning about you. Stretch us in this process of inductive study. Stretch us in this process of Ruth and of knowing who you are. And we ask this in the name of your Son, the Kinsman Redeemer. Amen. So, we're closing it early.